Kastani is a
registered
Kovacs advisor and is a registered representative of Kovacs Securities. Dan can help you with money management, security brokerage services, financial services including financial planning, preservation, estate protection, and much, much more. Over the next hour, Dan will share his wisdom on all of these subjects. Now, here's the host of Defending Your Money, Dan Ascunt.
And welcome once again to the Defending Your Money show, everyone. Thank you again for joining me. I'm here every day at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, replayed at 6:30 a.m. Eastern Time here on Money Talk Radio in South Florida, and streamed live and archived on our website. I'm the founder of Ascani Wealth Management. We're located in North Palm Beach, Florida, so our website is actually ascaniwm.com. But I always say just punch in defendingyourmoney.com into your browser. That will redirect you to our firm's website. And there, click on the radio icon on the lower right corner, and you can hear the archive shows or stream it live in case you can't get WSBR for some reason while you're in South Florida. Now, on this show, which is all about you as the consumer, the investor, and the business, defending, building, and preserving your wealth in this tough economy, we love to drill down below the surface layer of basic news and information, looking for additional clues, because that's where they are. Not everything is sitting there right on the surface layer for us all to see. It's not all that easy. The market's counterintuitive many times, as perhaps it even is now. And so we drill down below the surface layer, put it all together, look for clues. So this is an educational program. We don't give recommendations on the program, and you shouldn't construe anything I say as a recommendation, but we want to educate you on what's out there and what the process is that we use for investment planning and financial planning. Now, we specialize in discretionary account management through major clearing firms like Fidelity, TD Ameritrade, and Pershing. That means if you have an account at one of those firms, we can manage it for you. And even in a non-fee or a non-discretionary account, we can help get you securities that you wouldn't normally pay a fee on, such as maybe some types of bonds, real estate investment trusts, and so forth, that you normally wouldn't pay a fee on. So in that respect, we're a hybrid company. That means we do fee-based money management as well as non-fee or transactional-based accounts. And the point is we can get anything out there basically in the investment world for you. We're not pushing any particular product. It's all about how you put it together. And that's one thing this show is about. So let's get to the markets, see what's going on there, and then let's get to some other things like what's going on in the interest rate sector, how to boost your income, investment income that is, and what to do in this environment. Now, in the stock market, we seem to be in a sub-billion share per day environment on the New York Stock Exchange. We didn't even do a billion shares on today's rally. Now, here we are with Europe up smartly and the U.S. up not as smartly, a little bit. Dow up 83 points, but Europe was up smartly on the news that Portugal actually made it through today's government auction. I believe Portugal has to auction off about 20 billion euro in debt to finance its sovereign debt. Remember, Portugal is one of the so-called pigs countries, Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. Kind of a weird acronym, but it's spells pigs to as a quick way to summarize the key countries in Europe in bad debt trouble because these countries took on too much sovereign debt trying to rescue their economies. And countries like Spain have 20% unemployment as it is. So all eyes are on Portugal today and Italy tomorrow. Italy also strapped with debt, but they're not considered as bad off as the other pigs countries, I shouldn't say other pigs countries, the Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain pigs countries, because Italy's economy didn't collapse because of a big mortgage mess, and Italy is structured a little bit differently. They have a lot of debt, but they aren't strained like some of those other economies. In fact, they really may not have even been as strained as much as the U.S., which collapsed initially on the subprime mortgage meltdown, then the credit market meltdown, then, of course, the stock market and economic collapse. So today, European bourses up smartly, some of them up as much as 5%. Spain, and as a matter of fact, up 5%. Italy up almost 4%. A lot of the other countries, like Netherlands and Germany, up 1.5%, 2% roughly. And that's because Portugal made it through today's auction with one of the auctions this year. And the yield they had to pay investors to take that risky debt wasn't quite as high as investors expected. However, there are some $43 billion, the equivalent of, anyway, in European sovereign debt being auctioned off this week. And as we go through the year, each auction in Europe is going to be critical, and our market is watching that too. Because if Europe melts down or the European Union collapses or one of those countries implodes like Argentina did in 2003 and half of South America almost did around that time, if one of those European countries inside the European Union implodes, it's going to be half a disaster for that union, which is already having trouble smoothing out the differences in economic environments in each of the European Union countries. And it's particularly stressing countries like Germany, where the German Bund is the benchmark of sovereign bonds in Europe, stable. It's the benchmark there, like the U.S. Treasury bond is here. And Germany is being dragged down by some of these troubled countries, especially the PIGS countries. So today, Portugal passed the auction. Markets up smartly. The U.S. responded with a good rally. Faded a little bit at the end of the day, but I think most notable is not the fact that the Dow rally faded a little bit. It still closed up 83. We're still looking at two-year new highs here, actually, two-and-a-half-year new highs, I believe. It's not that that was notable. It's that the financial sector continues to recover. The financial select sector spider fund, for example, XLF, that's an ETF, an exchange-traded fund holding financial sector stocks, and KBE, which is a spider, KBW Bank ETF, both were up over 1.5%. And as I've been mentioning this week, recovering from their extended correction, the correction in the financial and banking sectors lasted much longer than the market in general. The market in general bottomed at the end of August, and actually so did the financial sector, but the averages, like the Dow, S&P, and so forth, made it above the April highs, the April 2010 high, at the end of the year, and are still trading above those highs and setting new, roughly, two-and-a-half-year highs. The financial sector has not yet, so all eyes are on that financial sector, especially with the European financial crisis and the banking systems over there and individual bank companies strained because they hold sovereign debt and they hold securities of each other. And if Europe tumbles in a contagion effect from a systemic problem, then a chain reaction of issues could occur with European banks, and that may be tied slightly to ours. Our bank's still trying to recover from this whole mess, and I think that this is still one of the most notable things here. The banking ETFs, the financial sector, the bank index up more than the Dow. In fact, over twice as much as the Dow and almost twice as much as the S&P 500, and it's just one day worth of trading, but they have been in a good uptrend, and we're going to watch that April high to see if it can be exceeded or if the bank sector actually double tops there. Now, this is going to be an important technical development if you're watching the markets rally right now, trying to figure out if it's going to continue. And that's why I said at the beginning of the show, welcome to the sub-billion share days on the New York Stock Exchange. We're rallying on nothing, almost rallying on thin air. There's just nothing happening in terms of volume in the stock market. And what that means is there's an absence of buyers and sellers, mainly sellers. There's enough buyers to push the market higher. But when we watch the health of the rally, again, looking below the surface layer here, the health of the rally, you want to see key sectors like financials, and technology and transportation do well and confirm the highs, new highs, that is, in the major averages like the Dow. You don't want to see the Dow and the S&P and the NASDAQ go to new highs by themselves. Then you have key sectors like the bank index and technology maybe not setting new highs. So far, not a lot to worry about except that the market is arguably overbought, overextended, hasn't had a decent correction in a while, and is moving up on low volume as it had coming into the other tops since the March 2009 low. And by other tops, I mean notably April 2010. The market rallied into that high just ahead of intense summer volatility and the flash crash of May 6, 2010, when the Dow was down 1,000 points intraday. It had rallied in April on fumes, almost no volume, signaling an absence of buyers. When the sellers moved in, a deep correction set in. No sign of sellers yet, but it's very early in the year. This is Dan Ascani with the Defending Your Money Show. Don't go away. I'll be right back after the break. Are you worried about whether the stock market will dive again? Are you concerned that another swoon could take away from your retirement and your financial future? Hi, I'm Dan Ascani, host of the Defending Your Money Show and founder of Ascani Wealth Management in North Palm Beach, Florida. For years, I've been managing client accounts using our proven models. I've been a licensed professional for over 25 years and have steered my clients and subscribers through our research through panics, crashes, and manias, including the crash of 87 and the crash of 2008. If you're considering well-researched and experienced money management, I invite you to call us toll-free at 877-578-5788. That's 877-578-5788, toll-free, or go to our website at defendingyourmoney.com for a free, no-obligation portfolio review. You'll be glad you did.
Dan Ascani is a registered investment advisor representative of Kovac Advisors, Inc. and a registered representative of Kovac Securities, member FINRA, SIPC.
Are you worried about whether the stock market will dive again? Are you concerned that another swoon could take away from your retirement and your financial future? Hi, I'm Dan Ascani, host of the Defending Your Money Show and founder of Ascani Wealth Management in North Palm Beach, Florida. For years, I've been managing client accounts using our proven models. I've been a licensed professional for over 25 years and have steered my clients and subscribers through our research through panics, crashes, and manias, including the crash of 87 and the crash of 2008. If you're considering well-researched and experienced money management, I invite you to call us toll-free at 877-578-5788. That's 877-578-5788, toll-free, or go to our website at defendingyourmoney.com for a free, no-obligation portfolio review. You'll be glad you did.
Dan Ascani is a registered investment advisor representative of Kovac Advisors, Inc. and a registered representative of Kovac Securities, member FINRA, SIPC.
Back with the Defending Your Money Show, which is all about you as the consumer, the investor, and the business, defending, building, and preserving your wealth in this tough economy. The first half of the show, I updated you on the markets, the European debt situation, where today was a critical day with Portugal's auction, and tomorrow will be critical with Italy's auction. Investors trying to get a handle on these auctions for the European crisis, or I should say during the European crisis, early in the year here, because the markets are watching, and interest rates have been rising with respect to those risky sovereign bonds in Europe because of the default risk, or at least because of the risk that the structure of the bonds or the terms of the bonds could change later on if these countries stay in trouble, or also because of the risk that in order to be bailed out, if these countries get in trouble, bailed out by the European Union, the European Union is going to ask for austerity measures in exchange, and austerity measures most notably slow down the economy, and that's not what people want right now. This is already a tepid recovery, so to speak, in the U.S. and Europe, and it's just you just don't need more factors causing further slowdown, especially here in the U.S., with the unemployment rate so high and in businesses really needing a boost from the economy so they can hire and the economy can recover. Now, there are some good signs because I've said on the show fairly recently, in the last couple of months anyway, and also have had some guests on the show updating the commercial real estate situation where lending is loosening up. And real estate investment companies, REIT companies, are having a lot less trouble these days than before. In fact, some of them are doing downright well, and that's because the situation in the commercial lending, commercial real estate, is loosening up. And what we want to see is that same thing to happen in residential and small business lending. It's not really loosening up that much in small businesses, although I hear the Small Business Association for SBA loans to small businesses is pretty active these days. Still tough, though, bankers tell me. Still tough to get an SBA loan if you're a small business. They're very strict and worried, the SBA and banks. And so we don't have that kind of loosening up yet with respect to lending to small businesses and, of course, to homeowners, where the mortgage market is still a mess being cleaned up. The foreclosures are being worked through. We still need more time in this economy for these problems to clear themselves up. And in the meantime, the stock market is all drifting up. It's almost like a slow motion melt up, a low volume melt up, something that I haven't seen very often in my nearly 30 years as a licensed professional and longer than that investing. I don't think we've had a period where the market does what it's doing now. And certainly it hasn't done this in bull markets and in the heyday of the 90s when the market set repeated new highs, it was on expanding volume. In fact, volume expanded throughout the decade of the 90s and perhaps even more so in the early 2000s. Then we had the crash on heavy volume. And then we had the kickoff from the March 2009 crash low on heavy volume and some decent volume, I guess, through the spring of 2009 and a little bit in the fall of 2009. But then it started to lighten up. And as I was saying before the break, in April 2010, the market did kind of what it's doing now. It went up in a string of days on less and less volume, or at least sub 1 billion share days, to where the 10-day average volume on the New York Stock Exchange would reach as low as 700 to 750 million shares in a day on the New York Stock Exchange. You could say that average is more like 1.3 billion. So at today's 950 million shares, we're trading well under average volume, and we're setting new 52-week highs. Seems like almost daily. It's not quite daily. There were some down days there, but there's a string of these up days, and December was marked by the same thing, a string of up days. I think the S&P was up all but 4 days in December, and volume collapsed, again, to around 700 million shares per day, average 10-day NYSE volume. And since it did that last April, and it can do it at highs, indicating a lack of buying interest, we're on the watch here. We're watching closely how the market acts, and we're watching the European auctions with interest, let alone the U.S. Treasury auctions. You know, the U.S. has quite a bit of debt to issue itself. We're watching these things for clues as to how long this rally might last. And then you might say, so what do you do with your portfolio if the market throws up the red flags? Well, let's talk about that process briefly. I've talked about it a lot on this show. I'm going to touch on it today, right now, but really the best thing to do is write down the phone number and call me at 877-578-5788, toll free. That's 877-578-5788, toll free. You can call me, ask for me, Dan Ascani, or one of our advisors, and ask for one of those portfolio reviews on steroids, as I call it. That's where we take a look at your portfolio, your investment portfolio. We input it into our software, take an x-ray of it, show you where you are in terms of measured risk, expected reward, where your concentrations are, where you might be lacking in diversification, or where you might be lacking in income inside your portfolio. Then we show you how to put together various investment products, investments like stocks, bonds, exchange-traded funds, whatever the case may be, in an organized, disciplined investment plan, and that's all part of a no-obligation portfolio review. It's going to show you some things you may not have known about your portfolio in terms of actual quantified risk versus reward. But the thing to do and the point of this whole thing is to have an organized way, an investment plan to put together the investments that are forming your future, your present and your future, and that have to take things into consideration, like what do you do if the stock market starts to dive again? What do you do if interest rates rise? What do you do if the Federal Reserve keeps diluting the value of the dollar in terms of purchasing power? That's called debasement of our currency, and that's the moral hazard the Federal Reserve takes by its easy money pedal to the metal policies, the pressure cooker relief valve. When the Fed does that, so much money being ejected into the economy, the pressure cooker relief valve is the dollar. And that's because the Fed throws so many dollars at you, at the economy, that it dilutes the value of them. You need more and more of them to buy food and energy and your goods and services that you need to live. And so all these things need to be taken into consideration when you're trying to meet your financial goals and manage risk. So the first step to achieving that is to have a plan, and within that plan you should have a quantifiable, measured risk. You should have a number or a set of numbers you're looking at. As I say, much like a doctor views your lab report, your blood work, during your annual physical. He looks at a bunch of numbers that may not mean much to you, but it means a lot to the physician. Well, we look at those numbers for your portfolio, and that's our job. And so that's how it all starts. When our models throw up the red flags for the stock market, meaning that the market is acting according to the models like it would be during a sustainable or severe correction, we take definitive action, and we'll show you what that is. We can also show you what our track record is for our managed accounts following our advice and the managed accounts, which we actively defend when our models turn negative. And that's why this show is called Defending Your Money, because during the crash of 2008, obviously, the market and what was happening to everyone's 401ks during the crash and the economy was the subject of discussion everywhere, it seemed. But during that crash and thereafter, many people would tell me they didn't even know there were investment vehicles that could help defend the portfolios, and they didn't know that there were ways to quantify it and that there were strategies like we have that actively defend. We're actually a manager that actively defends portfolios when our models turn negative on the market. I'm not saying any of this is perfect. There's nothing perfect in the investment world and no guarantees. And you can't predict the future with certainty because you and I are still creating the future. You can't predict something with certainty that hasn't happened yet. And so therefore, we use models and we use sophisticated software to quantify things like risk and the parameters, the telemetry, so to speak, of the market. We use all those to try to raise the odds as much above 50-50 as possible. Because if you're going by the seat of your pants, it's a coin flip 50-50 chance that what you're going to do is right. And it's not organized. It's not disciplined. It's not a plan if you're just going by the seat of your pants. But if you have a model, if you have a plan, and you have someone like us where it's our job to get you that plan and to execute it and become your financial consultant and help you achieve your goals and manage risk, then the odds should be well above 50-50 that you're going to be a successful investor and plan for your future. Just give me a call at the office, 877-578-5788, toll-free. That's 877-578-5788. 5788 toll free. This is Dan Ascani with the Defending Your Money Show. I'm here every weekday, 5 p.m. Eastern, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to Defending Your Money with your host, Dan Ascani of Ascani Wealth Management, located in the Golden Bear Plaza in North Palm Beach. Now it's time for you to take action. Give Dan a call and set up your free consultation, 877-578-5788. That's toll free, 877-578-5788. Or check out the website at www.AscaniWM.com. That's AscaniWM.com. And join us every day at this same time for Defending Your Money with your host, Dan Ascani, on AM 740 WSBR, South Florida's Money Talk Radio. The opinions expressed in this sponsored program is strictly related to folks, kids, and callers, and not necessarily those of the station, staff members, and their sponsors. Featuring the very best in business broadcasting, you are listening to AM 740 WSBR, South Florida's only Money Talk Radio. This radio show is a no-holds-barred, no-nonsense breakdown of every area of the financial market. Liberty International is committed to helping you to protect and grow your assets. If you have questions about the broadcast, call 954-202-9491 or go online to www.lifs.info. And now, here's Jeff Shuler.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, or early evening. Welcome to Capital Concepts. I'm Jeff Shuler. It is the end of a week, the end of the first week of 2011. And, you know, they say that the first week of the month sets the stage for the rest of the month. The first month of the year sets the stage for the year. Not so much this year. Not so much this year. We saw gold today ending off I'd have to say the hardest week it's had, the biggest slide that it's had since actually going back to about May of 2010. Down $1.30, closing at $13.67.80. Silver off 37 cents. It closed at $28.69. We had platinum up $5 at $17.31. We had palladium down 10. At 750. Dow Jones Industrial Index gave up 22.55. It closed at 11,674.76. NASDAQ down 672 at 2703.17. We had the S&P 500 down 2.35 at 1271.50. And over in Tokyo, the Nikkei was up 1128, closing at 10,541.04. Oil managed to gain 7 pennies, closing at $88.45 a barrel. The dollar up 0.16 at 81.08. It gained against the South African Kugerrand, the euro, the Swiss franc, the renminbi, the ruble, the rupee, and the Mexican peso. Actually, it was really strong again against the euro. It did lose ground against the Canadian and Australian dollars, the British pound, and the yen. Jobs growth came out. Can't really call it growth, really. All these expectations. Now, I talked yesterday about ADP coming out and saying there was going to be a whopping 300,000 jobs created in December. The actual number? Not what most economists said at 175,000. Not the 150,000 that many others said would it be. A whopping 103,000. Private hiring up 113,000. Government employment negative 10,000. That's something that you got to keep in mind. All these municipalities that are facing cutbacks, all the ones that are getting ready to go belly up, they got to cut something. And there are hundreds of thousands of superfluous workers getting paid really very good wages and ridiculously good benefits working for municipalities around the country. They'll lose their jobs. It's going to hurt. However, if this statistic does not finally make the American people say, "Hey, that's a bunch of bourgeois," it never will. The unemployment number dropped from 9.8% to 9.4%, the lowest since May 2009, It was the biggest monthly drop in 12 years. Now, the drop came from an increase in employment, but more so, a huge decline in the overall labor force. People gave up looking. It's so bad. What happened was, so many people gave up looking. It had a demonstrative effect on the unemployment rate. You see, our government, when it compiles this statistic, this number, it's not the amount of people that are actually unemployed. No, no. It's the amount of people that are not only not employed, but are actively seeking work through a definable source of seeking work, employment agencies, things like that. So if you finally give up after 2 or 3 or 4 years of looking for a job because there's just nothing out there for you, you're no longer considered unemployed by the U.S. government. Not when it comes to the unemployment rate. The real number, we always talk about the real number, that includes those people, includes people working 10, 15 hours a week, closer to 18%. But when we look at this, 103,000, that's dismal. It takes about 150,000 new jobs just to break even because of all the new people now entering the workforce able age. There is no way that you can take this as anything but extremely negative. Now, in a little bit better, they're saying October-November were revised, shows that with about 70,000 more jobs created during those 2 months than previously reported. So that's good. But the December number is just not good. And you hear Bernanke talking, things are getting, better. We won, we did good. No. Now, the treasuries did go up after these numbers. And primarily because you've got the economy, it's weak, it's going to stay weak, it's going to be that way for a while, and the government is going to continue through the Fed to try and hold interest rates down by buying back treasuries. So that helped the treasury market out quite a bit. We'll see how that can continue. Interesting little bit of information. If you follow these credit default swaps, when it comes to sovereign debt, Greece has become the world's riskiest borrower. Did that in the fourth quarter of 2010, surpassing Venezuela, Spain, Portugal, and Ireland are now riskier than Iraq. Spain, Greece, Portugal, and Ireland, the pigs, are now riskier than Iraq. Think about that. Put that into context. Spain is a pretty big economy and very important to the Eurozone. Now, Portugal and Ireland and Greece, not as much. But put them together, pretty much, that's a good size. Think about that. Riskier, as defined by investors, people that put money into this, than Iraq. And you wonder why I think that the euro is in jeopardy. while the euro as a political entity is in jeopardy, and why owning gold is imperative. Now, 11 signs that the job market is improving. Got to go this guy. I want to give both sides. December jobs report may have disappointed some, but as the economy revs back to life, there's improvements in the job market. This isn't for me. I just want to read and we'll go over this. Revisions are positive. In its monthly jobs report, the Labor Department revised October-November. That's true. And historically, we've seen most of these revisions all throughout 2010, you know, up until really the end, all the revisions were negative. They were downward. Economists are feeling that tingle. I certainly think, I guess economists are now thinking that. History. If history is a guide, this is about the time in the last two business cycles that businesses started to step up and hire. Okay? ADP is wrong again. holiday shopping spirit. Well, there was not much there, but we're good. Job listings are up. Hiring for people to do more hiring. Those people hiring people. Small business optimism. I guess the small business owner sentiment turned higher in November after dropping over the summer. That's according to a survey done by Wells Fargo and Gallup. I'm not so sure it's enough to cause hiring. Corporate profits are good. Moonlighting is on the decline. A man scrambled to hire the homeless guy. Ted Williams, a homeless guy with the golden voice whose YouTube video is now being viewed by more than 11 million people, set up a hiring frenzy when the video went viral. Okay, I look at this and I'm like, not so much. Not so much. But consumers did boost borrowing in November. They increased the amount they borrowed in November to buy cars and attend college, marking the first back-to-back consumer credit gain in over 2 years. The Federal Reserve said consumer debt rose $1.3 billion in November after a $7 billion increase in October. The October figure is double the gain that the government initially reported. Mostly auto loans and student loans. Okay, you can see that's the time of the year when student loans are taken out. And with all the incentives going on for automobiles, that kind of makes sense. You can't spin that as a negative if people are actually out there buying cars with money they don't own. And you can't get the credit if you're in foreclosure, so somebody can't say, well, that's money that people were otherwise spending on their home. Unless they lost their house and they're now renting, but still, there's got to be a gap there somewhere. And the U.S. deficit narrowed. The U.S. budget deficit narrowed just a little bit. In the first 3 months of the fiscal year, they're crediting it, or the CBO is crediting an improving economy that boosted tax revenues. The government recorded a deficit of $371 billion in October, November, and December. $18 billion less than the deficit recorded in the same period a year earlier. Revenues rose almost 9%. Spending increased by 3%. Well, if revenues rose by 9%, spending only increased by 3%. Should have gotten better than that. Interest payments and government debt rose by 10% as the total amount of debt rose to $14 trillion. Unemployment benefit payments decreased by 15% because of the decline in the number of claims and lowered amount of benefits. Last but not least, before we get into it, the Massachusetts Supreme Court upheld a lower court ruling that Wells Fargo and U.S. Bancorp did not have the proper paperwork to foreclose on two homes. The question: what does that mean for the broader range of people in the mortgage market? Future of millions upon millions.